Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind.
Hello and welcome to the Heritage Radio Network. This week we have a very special program with two special guests, Jamie Dement and Richard Holcomb, who are partnering up to open Eno Restaurant, a new farm-to-table restaurant and market in Durham, North Carolina, named after the river that flows through Durham. Welcome, Jamie and Richard.
Hi.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on HRN.
Thank you.
Eno is going to offer a daily menu dictated by its partner Farms Harvest. So Jamie and Richard and their chef, Marco Shaw, are going to create a menu based on what's being harvested fresh from Coon Rock Farm, which is the partnering farm, and that's your farm, right, Richard?
That's correct.
So why don't you guys tell us a little bit, introduce yourselves, and tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and a little bit about the forces that led to your desire to create this revolutionary model for a restaurant.
Okay. Jamie, you want to go first?
Sure. I like going first. So essentially, I'm from Eastern North Carolina. I grew up in a rural county. It was a farming community. My family owned a farm supply company, and it provided seeds and feed to all the local farmers. And as I was growing up, I watched this farm economy die. And when you have a perfect sideline view for something like that, you start to wonder, well, one, why is this happening, and mm-hmm. and two, what can I do about it? And then beyond that, I have a huge gregarious family it's full of cooks and gardeners and people who truly value food. And food is the center of the social network. And so I was seeing one really strong aspect of my family and my life kind of dying away, but still holding on to some of the very strong traditions, the preserving, the canning, the big communal meals. And that, as I grew up, it was always in the back of my head that I wanted to find some way to get back to this, this world that I knew as a child. And then I left Franklin County and went to college, ended up in D.C. working on Capitol Hill. And then I went and did some political fundraising after that, and then some nonprofit fundraising. And at the end of the day, I was making good money and I met some incredible people along the way, but I didn't.
There was something missing.
Something was missing, absolutely. And then I met Richard, and he had just bought Coon Rock Farm, and what he was doing just seemed, to fit. It made sense. There's nothing more rewarding than going out and working in the dirt with your hands and planting the seeds, and then at dinner time going out and being able to harvest something that you planted a few months earlier and cooking it and serving it to people who appreciate it and who love it. And so it's this beautiful cycle I've never experienced anything more rewarding. So the idea for Eno it was a natural evolution from, really wanting to be in touch with producing good food. And then the next obvious step is wanting to provide access to it to other people,
sure. And,
which we're already doing we own a restaurant in Raleigh, North Carolina already, Zelly and Ritz. And we supply the meat and vegetables for Zelly and Ritz, but it's a Mediterranean style restaurant. So there's just, you can't get tahini locally in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
It's a little hard to source locally. So we've started Eno from the beginning with the idea that the entire menu will be based on what's being produced at the farm every day.
Okay, so Richard, how did you meet Jamie, and how did you get involved with the farm that you now own?
Well, so I actually met Jamie at a fundraiser Jamie was doing fundraising for the Museum of Natural Sciences in North Carolina, and I was on the board of the museum. So that's how we met. My background is that I actually grew up farming in Eastern North Carolina.
Okay.
I'm about a half generation older than Jamie. So I came up at that time when, when I got out of high school, I enjoyed farming as a kid, would have continued farming, but the option wasn't available. It was the time in agriculture in the 70s where the slogan was get big or get out. mm-hmm. and, you know, not having the financial means to get big or even really the desire to be a, you know, big, massive kind of farmer. Mm-hmm. I went to college. I got a degree in computer science. I started a few businesses here and around the world and had a really good sort of business life for 20, 25 years. Had some children, was raising them in the city, doing all the things that, you know, successful people are supposed to do. And as they became teenagers, I looked out and saw them and said, you know, their life of video games and TV late at night and, you know, hanging out at the mall is really different than the life I grew up with, working in the garden and farming and driving the tractor. And I decided my life was better. The childhood I had growing up in a relatively poor rural setting was far better than what my children were having growing up in a very privileged, you know, urban setting. Mm-hmm. So we bought the farm. We decided, we sat down, we talked together, and we went out and we bought a farm locally. It hadn't been actually farmed as a commercial enterprise in some years. It was a hobby horse farm when I bought it. It had a lot of damage from hurricanes and tornadoes and different mm-hmm. things. The place was in pretty bad repair. The house had been built in the late 1800s, so we sort of moved out of the little mini mansion we had into the city into about an 1,100 square foot, 120-some-year-old house on the farm. Initially, we just did it on weekends. The plan was we would, you know, have something to do on the weekends, and that lasted about 2 weeks. After going out for 2 weeks and playing on the farm on the weekends and then having to drive back into the city to go to school during the week, the kids actually volunteered to, well, why do we want to do that? Let's just stay out here. Then the other part of the whole coming together with restaurants and farming was, you know, I had really spent my computer career, a large portion of it, out of the country. Fantastic meals, Paris, Sydney, Tokyo. I mean, you name the place, and I can name some good restaurants in those places. And, you know, I would travel for 2 or 3 weeks. I would come home, and then I'd be in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it was really hard to come up with the list of super great restaurants. And I met a chef who had a restaurant in town, and he and I hit it off. His food was fantastic. I became one of his best customers. And as time went on, this all sort of came together at the same time. The chef was Israeli. He appreciated, he grew up in a kibbutz in mm-hmm. Israel. He really appreciated, you know, fresh local food and that he could make dishes from what he picked out of his garden that day or what was coming from my little small garden in the house I lived in town. And, you know, over a period of a couple of years, the desire to get the kids back out of the country, the desire to, you know, get involved in a restaurant venture where the food at the restaurant all came locally, just all sort of gelled and uh-huh. came together. So I bought the farm. We started the first restaurant, Zelli and Ritz, at about the same time. And then, a year or two later, met Jamie. She has a lot more passion and energy and just, you know, verve than I do. She had the idea of, well, great, you got one restaurant, and let's do another. Let's do one that's completely farm to table. Let's find another chef that's got a fantastic life story, and we've been successful in doing that by finding Marco Shaw from Portland. And
how'd you guys find Marco?
Marco found us. It's actually an interesting story. We started planning Eno, and we started talking about it in the food community and in Raleigh, and I guess the buzz got out, and people started talking about it on blogs in the area. And he read about it. Marco is from, he grew up in D.C., but his family's from Durham.
Oh, okay.
And so he wanted to move his family back east and was looking in the Durham area. He knew he owned Fife Restaurant in Portland, and he knew he wanted to sell his restaurant and move back east. So he started looking around the Triangle area for, you know, restaurant jobs. And he saw that we were opening a farm-to-table restaurant, which was exactly what he'd been doing in Portland. And he started emailing me, and he started emailing me almost a year ago. And I wasn't even in the frame of mind to hire a chef. I mean, we're still talking general ideas about the restaurant. And he was completely persistent. He flew to North Carolina. I didn't answer a single one of his emails because I was a slacker. So he got on an airplane, flew to North Carolina, and finally called, found out who our lawyer was, had our lawyer call us and say, "Hey, guys, you've got to meet this guy. He's driving me crazy." And so he showed up at the farm. He called and said, "I'm 20 minutes away. I want to come by your farm." And within 15 minutes, Richard wasn't even there that day. I called him when Marco left and said, "I found him. I found him." And
you know, I thought she had lost a sheep.
Yeah. So it's really a match made in heaven. He has done you know, he's run the gamut. He's done farm to table, which is difficult for many chefs because, you know, you don't order for the next 3 months. A lot of chefs who can order from the big truck companies, they can place orders for the next 3 months and their menu never changes. And Marco's menu will change from, you know, from the morning to lunchtime to what he's serving in the evening based on what's coming off the farm, what the weather is like that day. You know, some farmers will show up with he'll show up in the driveway with a truckload of butternut squash, and so all of a sudden he's got a ton of butternut squash to do something with. And so it's very important when you're working in a farm to table restaurant that the chef have some experience and be willing to be creative.
To think on their feet.
Yeah, last year we had a bumper cucumber crop. I mean, we were picking hundreds of pounds of cucumbers a day. And I love to make pickles, but I got to the point where I couldn't make a single pickle. And we started taking them to Zelle and Ritz, to the restaurant in Raleigh, and there were cucumbers in every dish for days. But the chef is creative enough to pull together a cold cucumber soup and a cucumber martini and you know, you can hide cucumbers lots of places.
So the menu, you said, is not only going to change seasonally and daily, but it might also change meal to meal.
Yeah, if it's, you know, if you wake up one day in March and it's cold and rainy in the morning, and then lunch will be stews and pot pie and, you know, warm comfort food. But the weather in North Carolina is crazy, especially in the springtime. So it can be cold and rainy in the morning, and by dinner time it'll be 70 degrees, and you'll have a patio full of people wanting, you know, light, fresh fare. So the menu will absolutely change according to, you know, to what the weather is. You might have light fish in the evening when you were hunkered down with your pot pie at lunch.
Okay. And Richard, explain to me why you think this farm-to-table dining model, culinary model, is so vital to the well-being of the American food system.
Okay, well, to me, there's a couple key things. One is, you know, farm-to-table is good for the farm and it's good for the table. We talk about, you know, a sustainable economy, a local economy. One of the first things in sustainable is profitable. A business that isn't profitable isn't going to stay in business.
We interviewed Joe Bastian, and she said the very same thing.
If it's not profitable, it's not sustainable. Well, farming is a hard business. Restaurants are a hard business. If you look up the statistics on either of them, you know, they tend to go out of business and not do that well as individual items. But when a farm combines with a restaurant, it's beneficial for both. From the restaurant perspective, they can, you know, get anything they want from the farm. They can sit down with seed catalogs in the winter and tell us what they want to, you know, be serving at the restaurant in the fall. And we can plant those things. From the farm perspective, if we've got extra of something like Jamie was just talking with cucumbers, you know, we don't have to throw them away. We can take them to the restaurant and, you know, they can use them or they can preserve them. They can, you know, make multiple dishes out of them and take advantage of it. You also have the advantage of, from a sustainability perspective, on the meat side of using what we call whole animal. Most restaurants buy lamb chops, right?
Mm-hmm. You're going to use all the offcuts.
Yes, Americans love lamb chops. Well, there aren't that many. You know, on a 80, 90-pound sheep, there's only 4 or 5 pounds of lamb chops. Probably not even that many. What do you do with all the rest of it? Well, we'll be providing whole animals to the restaurant. So you'll get lamb chops, but, you know, you'll have the shanks and you'll have the bits and pieces that go into ground lamb, and then those then go into, you know, other kind of special dishes. So,
and you have a chef inventive enough to come up with good preparations for those offcuts?
Right. You have to have a chef who's willing to, you know, not unwrap a plastic package and take his lamb chops and throw it in the grill. You got to have a chef who's willing to take a whole animal, grab a knife, and, you know, start doing some of the processing himself.
And so do you think that this model can be made more widespread, and can this become a model that's affordable enough for the average lower middle class to lower class American?
Yeah, I think so, because the costs are less. I mean, there are huge transportation costs in, you know, from North Carolina. A lot of the food that you get in the grocery store comes from California or comes from China. And the production costs in those places are probably less than what they are in California. But the fuel costs of moving them across the country, and then the loss of nutrition as they move across the country, it, you know, impacts us as consumers. And we see more and more of that on an individual basis. People are shopping at farmers markets and buying from local farmers, you know, at a rapidly growing rate. Farmers markets are expanding. The number of farms producing local organic fresh produce and meats for those markets are expanding. So if I've made the decision to, you know, to buy locally, to eat locally when I cook at home, why should I have to get factory food when I go to a restaurant? I mean, mm-hmm. As soon as you ask the question, it's kind of obvious. It's, well, mm-hmm. well, I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm making extra special effort to get up early on a Saturday morning and go to the farmer's market and pick out just the lettuce that I want. But when I go out to dinner that night, I'm getting lettuce from, you know, who knows where, probably from California or, you know, some other country. That isn't necessary. I mean, you should be able to, in most places in the United States, produce the vast majority of food locally that's, you know, to be consumed at home or to be consumed in the restaurant. And it's good for the overall economy. I mean, if we put farmers back to work, then you create jobs in a local community. If you create those farm jobs and all those processing, all the add-on work of farming, from taking food that's raised on the farm and turning it into something that you eat on the restaurant table, all those steps in the middle are more jobs for local people. So uh-huh. it enhances the economy, it enhances employment, and it keeps the money local.
Health. So tell me, why do you think there has been this resurgence in interest in locality, in quality of food, in the farm-to-table movement that we've seen over the better part of the last decade? Why do you think Americans have developed a distaste for big agribusiness?
I think a lot of it is they're finally coming to realize, a lot through media attention from folks like Michael Pollan and Omnivore's Dilemma and the Food Inc. movie that's come out recently, that mm-hmm. that the food we're getting from factory farmers is cheap, but it's not good. It's not healthy. You know, it's based on a sea of petroleum. You can't raise the corn, the soybeans, the hogs, the cows that we raise in this country the way we raise them without importing massive amounts of petroleum from, more than likely, from the Middle East to grow all that stuff and get it to us at a cheap rate. So when you think about it, when you sit down and you eat that factory hamburger, you're eating oil. You're eating oil that was imported from someplace else. And the alternative is to probably pay just a little bit more for that hamburger, uh-huh. but get it local, get it from a cow that only ate grass, which was the only thing cows were intended to eat. They weren't intended to eat corn. And get it from people that are now employed and have jobs because you're buying local fresh stuff that's healthier for you and healthier for the local economy. So once it becomes known, once you start to read and understand and talk to your neighbors, it's become a movement.
I see. And so, Jamie, why don't you tell us a little more about what we can expect from Eno? When's the grand opening? Where can someone find out more information?
You can find out information on our website. It's enorestaurantandmarket.com. One of the components of the restaurant, the restaurant will seat about 130 people for dinner, but there's a market component to the restaurant.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
There's a separate entrance and everything. It will be open all day, every day. We'll open at 7 o'clock in the morning. We'll have takeout, breakfast serviced, and, you know, cappuccinos, things like that. But you'll also be able to buy anything that's on the restaurant menu and take it home with you. So if you come and sit down and you eat the best pork chop you've ever had in your whole life,
which you obviously
will, because it's Coon Rock Farm pigs, you're at the end of dinner, you'll get a market menu also, and you can order from the market menu and bag it up, take it out, or you can just run in the market on Wednesday afternoon and pick up some really great ground lamb or whatever vegetables are coming in from the farm. And then we'll also have any of the cheeses that are on the menu from our local cheese producers. You'll be able to buy them in there. And then we'll also do, you know, some prepared foods. You know, if it's, you know, summertime and we have a ton of tomatoes, then there'll be, mm-hmm. you know, ready-made pico ready to go.
And so it'll be like a Dean and DeLuca, but better.
Adina and DeLuca, but more local. So I would
better
say better.
Quality,
yes.
More local.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely more local.
Yes.
I happen to like Dean and DeLuca.
I do like Dean and DeLuca, but it will, you know, it'll be food from 8 miles down the road. And there'll also be a daily, like, layer cake, a daily pound cake and daily pie that you can, you know, buy by the cake or slice to take out. So the market component is, it's something that we hope will help build community in the area, and most importantly, just provide more access to the food that people should be eating.
There's also an education aspect. One of the things that we find at the farmers market is that so many Americans have forgotten how to cook. I mean, Thanksgiving is coming up, and we sell a lot of heritage breed turkeys. And I get, you know, 40, 50-year-old women that have never cooked a turkey and are terrified at the thought of cooking
one. Crying at the farmer's
one.
Market. Like, I don't know what to do.
And one of the reasons that we don't eat local food as much as we used to is that, you know, we like tomatoes. Well, you can get a local tomato in July. You can't get a local tomato in North Carolina or in New York in the middle of the winter. Well, what we used to do a generation ago was we canned tomatoes and we froze tomatoes, and people have lost those skills. Mm-hmm. But they want those skills back, at least a subsection of them do, and we'll offer canning classes and preserving classes and how to cook the, you know, something other than a steak. You know, there's a lot more meat on a cow than a steak and hamburger. And there's techniques for cooking, you know, pieces of beef that aren't as tender
braising,
as a ribeye.
You know, we'll teach braising classes.
Stewing.
And
oh, so there's a whole educational component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So someone could theoretically take a trip down to North Carolina just to get involved with the restaurant, the market, the education.
Mm, absolutely. We do farm tours every Saturday. It's more like an open farm every Saturday from 10 to noon. You can come and hang out and play with the animals, pick your own vegetables.
Cool.
And then the restaurant will have a lot of interactive components. There's a chef's table in the back, so that it's a 6-seat table and you can sit and the chef serves you directly and you can have 100% interaction with the kitchen staff. Another interesting component of what we plan to do is that all of the restaurant staff will work a shift per week at the farm.
Oh, so, cool. So that, they'll be super educated about
that.
Yeah. So they'll be able to, you know, to talk to you about, you know, what not just what variety of beet this was, but what it looked like when it was planted and when it was picked and how miserable it was to weed it. You know, they'll know the whole life cycle. Mm-hmm. So it's everything will be completely interactive. And the cooking and canning and preserving classes will be, you know, they obviously won't be every day, but we'll do a series of them throughout the year to teach people seasonal cooking techniques. We've done it through the farm some in the past, and some have been hilarious, and some but everybody comes away, they've learned something that it's strange for me, I guess, because I am young, but I learned those lessons growing up. I mean, my grandmother has a canning kitchen. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, it's a separate kitchen, and in the summertime, once a month, all the women in my family would come together in her canning kitchen and either, you know, canned tomatoes or freeze butter beans, and so it's so foreign to me that there are so many people that seem brilliant and well educated and seem to really, you know, get through life doing pretty well, who can't even fathom how you would get this tomato, this red raw tomato, into a jar and be able to eat it 6 months later, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a
wow. It's well, a that's a really neat idea, especially how the servers have to mm-hmm. put a shift mm-hmm. in on the farm. Yeah. and so on and so forth. It's a really holistic approach to cuisine. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it. When are you opening again?
We hope to be open by like January, February this year. It's probably okay. February is more like it. You know, you got to get through all the permitting and all that.
Okay, and the website one more time
it's,
for our listeners?
It's www.eno restaurantandmarket.com.
Well, Richard and Jamie, I'd like to thank you on behalf of HRN and wish you only the best with your ventures.
Thank you.
No, thank
Check
you.
Us out on the archives, www.heritageradionetwork.com/archives. And tune in next week for another Heritage Radio Network special. Thanks, Hearst Ranch. For the county, and I drive the main road.